It's a new day for every American. Start today right by getting facts and only facts at dnewman.org. You want the truth about today's important matters? Truth coming up. Here's Dan.
And thanks for joining us on Thursday, June the 7th, as we continue our political corruption, I guess we call this a series. We're going to continue it. As you know, we've had several chapters with political corruption stories from Washington, D.C. We've got another one today with several other corruption cases we're going to look at. But anyway, I want to remind you, if you don't want to lose an opportunity or forget, if you'll go to the homepage, dnewman.org, and in the right bottom part of the front page of the website, enroll your email address. We won't bother you. You won't get any junk emails. We don't give your email address to anybody. But what you will receive is every time a new story goes up in either written or podcast audio format, that night you'll get an email with a link to that broadcast or to that story. And then you won't forget about it being there or coming back to the website. You won't miss anything. You click on the link and you'll go right to it. That's the homepage of dnewman.org. So let's get right to it today. We're going to bring it forward on the calendar a little bit further than we had before. We've talked about some political corruption cases in the Washington, D.C. for sale saga, and they were a little bit older. Let's bring it forward to the last couple of years. And we'll start today with a story about Senator Bob Menendez. You'll remember he is a senator from the state of New Jersey. The Department of Justice announced earlier this year that it wasn't going to retry the New Jersey Democrat. You may remember he was tried during 2017 for a pretty ugly corruption case. And that trial ended in a hung jury. When that happens, the prosecutor can opt to either retry it or to drop all of those charges or just leave the charges open but say we're not going to retry it. And that's what happened here. The Department of Justice decided not to retry him. Menendez was accused of accepting donations and gifts, a whole bunch of money and a whole bunch of gifts from a wealthy friend in exchange for political influence. That's why he was charged and tried. Both Menendez and the doctor, who is Salomon Melgen, maintained their innocence before and throughout the trial and still do, for that matter. From the beginning, I never wavered in my innocence and my belief that justice would prevail. This is Menendez talking. I am grateful that the Department of Justice took the time to reevaluate its case and came to the appropriate conclusion. He said that on social media right after the DOJ made the announcement they weren't going to retry him. Menendez is up for re-election this year, this fall. He was selected, you may remember, to replace another guy who got in a lot of trouble, in fact, has been in jail, former Governor John Corzine, Democrat from New Jersey, in the Senate in 2005. When all this began, Menendez, who was on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee as its ranking member, he stepped down while this trial was going on. But on February 6th, a couple of months ago, after he had stepped down back in 2015 when he was indicted, he rejoined that Senate Foreign Relations Committee and is the ranking member there. Well, let's look at what he did or what he was accused of doing. He was accused of accepting a plethora, there's a big word, of gifts and donations from that doctor in Florida, Melgen, for lobbying on his behalf. Menendez, who was 64, took an abundance of campaign donations in dollars and cents, some of it in gifts, some of it in vacations, from Dr. Melgen, who was a Florida ophthalmologist. Prosecutors alleged that Menendez faced that trial in 2017 for all of those charges. In return, prosecutors claimed he used his position to lobby on behalf of Melgen's business interest. Listen to this. Melgen allegedly directed more than $750,000 in campaign contributions to entities, not directly to Menendez, but to entities that supported the senator, according to the indictment, which prosecutors said were inducements to get Menendez to use his influence on the doctor's behalf. Prosecutors also said Menendez tried to hide those gifts, which is a double-dip no-no. Melgen paid for the Menendez and his girlfriend's trip to stay for 3 nights at a Parisian hotel where rooms typically cost about $1,500 a night. And he also allowed the senator the use of his private jet. Federal prosecutors said that Menendez sold his office for a lifestyle that he couldn't afford. That's the actual verbiage in the original indictment. The indictment also alleged that Menendez pressured State Department officials to give visas to 3 young women who were described as Melgen's girlfriends. What was Menendez's defense? Both Menendez and Melgen pleaded not guilty. Menendez has just been voracious in his denial of the accusations against him. Throughout the original trial, defense attorneys sought to prove that Menendez and Melgen had been friends since before the former became a senator, and the trips were nothing more than friends traveling together. That's the trips. What about $750,000, you ask? Well, we don't know, and we probably will never know for sure. Is there anything that you need to know about Dr. Melgen? Listen to this, folks. The Florida ophthalmologist is accused of giving Menendez gifts in exchange for help with his personal and financial dealings. Melgen, who is 63, a year younger than the senator, was convicted of 67 counts of health care fraud in April of 2017 in what the Palm Beach Post in Florida called one of the biggest Medicare fraud cases in U.S. history. Melgen was sentenced to 17 years in prison on February 22nd this year for Medicare fraud, as he persuaded patients to undergo treatments they did not necessarily need. Aside from Menendez, Melgen has given big bucks, lots of dollars, to a variety of other Democratic lawmakers, and that's according to public records. How did it all end? Well, after the jury again informed the judge they could not reach a decision, U.S. District Court Judge William H. Walls declared a mistrial, saying he found no alternative. And that happened right after election time last year. The mistrial was declared on November 16th. Senator Bob Menendez, Democrat from New Jersey, our first political corruption story of the day. And there's more to come. Got a couple more stories to talk to you about. One of them you may be familiar with. I don't think you are about the other one. Sit tight. That's just ahead at dnewman.org.
Dear Daddy, dear Mom,
I love you.
I miss you.
Every year, Snowball Express honors the children of fallen soldiers. Hi, everybody. I'm Tony Orlando. Join me in proudly supporting Snowball Express, a nonprofit that creates opportunities to help heal the children of our fallen heroes. We can never repay the sacrifice our soldiers have made, but we can honor them by giving back to their children. Donate now at snowballexpress.org.
Subway Restaurant's Storytime Theater proudly presents Jack and the Beanstalk.
Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell something delicious. Hey, little fella, what you got there?
Oh, this? It's the big hot pastrami sub from Subway Restaurants.
Mmm, that does look tasty.
It sure is. Climbing that beanstalk out there makes you hungry.
You mind if I have a bite?
Sure! I'll trade you for that goose over there with the golden eggs.
You got a deal!
Hungry for something big? Then pick up a big hot pastrami sub from Subway Restaurants. Layer upon layer of delicious hot pastrami stacked high and toasted to flavorful perfection on freshly baked bread. Topped with pickles, mustard, and melted Swiss cheese, it's the perfect way to satisfy any giant-sized appetite. Big Hot Pastrami, available at participating restaurants for a limited time only. See restaurants for details. Subway, eat fresh.
Not just political, not just lifestyle, but always relevant. See and hear it first at dnewman.org.
We're back with you almost every day, and of late we have been in the middle of a series, Political Corruption, Washington, D.C. for Sale. And we talked about Senator Bob Menendez, Democrat from New Jersey, and his corruption trial that ended in a mistrial, a hung jury. Well, let's fast forward a little bit to another Democrat, this one from Florida, chairwoman of the DNC formerly, Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Democrat leaders have constantly shown themselves to be pretty irresponsible when it comes to things regarding national security. And I'm going to give you a guy's name you may have heard once or twice, but it'll be a name you'll need to remember a while. Imran Awan. His case illustrates that the pattern of dangerous incompetence is particularly true of the Democrats' approach to cybersecurity in D.C. The summer of 2017 saw the arrest of disgraced former House IT worker Imran Awan at Washington Dulles as he was headed for a Pakistan-bound flight. That's where he's from. Authorities have been watching closely after he allegedly committed bank fraud, and his bank fraud consisted of transferring $283,000 to Pakistan earlier in the year. This whole issue started back in 2016, which was a big year for Democrats making really bad decisions. A total of 44 House Democrats, including then Debbie Wasserman Schultz, chose to exempt Pakistani IT aides from completing background checks urged by the Shared Employee Handbook that controls hiring employees at Congress. According to congressional documents, House Democrats exploited a loophole, kind of a stupid thing to do, by hiring procedures that exempt potential employees from background checks if, and here's the big if, another member of Congress vouches for them. This allowed people with questionable backgrounds, such as Imran Awan and his brothers, Abid Awan and Jamal Awan, to join the House of Representatives staff. Those IT aides later made unauthorized access to congressional data. Think about that. Here's some guys from Pakistan, a family of guys. They were not vetted in their background investigation, yet they have access to congressional IT computer systems. A House Inspector General report found the workers used the many passwords they had to log into multiple representatives' devices. That's phones, laptops, desktops, under the representatives' own usernames. Many they didn't even work for. They used those devices to download data off the House network and proceeded to cover their tracks so nobody would suspect anything. The House Inspector General concluded this could have all been avoided if those background checks had been properly handled. Even after learning of the team's activities, Wasserman Schultz still decided to keep Imran Awan on staff. All this information should outrage everybody, Democrats and Republicans alike. And initially, I think there was some pushback, but I haven't heard a lot about it lately. The Democrats' careless hiring and password management practices proves just one thing. Occupational competence alone does not guarantee security. They may look like they're nice people. They may smile. They may laugh. They may seem to be okay. But why in the heck would you not conduct background investigations on people that were every day in the congressional computer system? There's far too much sensitive information at stake. Too many people want to use that info to cause damage, and believe me, they will pay a bunch of money for access to it. You know, we're in the middle of a Russia collusion case, and there's no evidence tying the Trump campaign to Russia. But what about these guys? They've got access to all kinds of congressional documents, secret documents, classified information. What's to prevent them from peddling some of that to Russia? And will we ever know if they did? This means that every precaution, no matter how time-consuming or how difficult or tedious, we got to do it. This includes, but is not limited to, extensive background coupled with adapting anti-subterfuge security practices that every good security firm in the United States has at their disposal. United States security systems. Background checks should be a given. You would think it would be an automatic thing because personal circumstances can play a big role in a person's course of action and how they act and what they do and what they don't do. The Awan family circus is on the extreme end of background check stories. They nevertheless gained access to all kinds of information that more than just a few folks were trying on the black market to get their hands on. Why? Because Democratic leadership chose to take the easy way out. I don't need to tell you, that was pretty dumb. Actually, it's pretty stupid. When it comes to password management, the same principle applies there too. Go the extra mile and take the time and effort needed to protect your devices, your data, your networks, and yourself. Think about all of the security ads you see on TV now. All the different companies that come out with ways to help us protect our passwords, our login names, on everything. We all have a bunch of them. And folks, there are people out there that spend 24/7 every week hacking into computer systems, and they have software programs written to figure out your password. Speaking of passwords, create big ones, strong ones, that are at least 12 characters. Use a combination of capital letters, lowercase letters, numbers, symbols, and don't keep using the same password everywhere, and don't use it all the time. Change those passwords routinely, regularly, and at least do that every 3 to 6 months. Especially important now, we're talking about Washington, D.C. Philosophical alignment, what we do when we work in Congress, is really imperative for IT and cybersecurity workers handling those sensitive data and devices, especially in government offices. This is particularly true for VIPs and elite organizations up there too. Think about all the lobbying firms, the law firms, political action committees, and advocacy organizations. They're all over D.C. K Street is where all the lobbying organizations and law firms sit. They're going to be hacked or attempted to be hacked all the time at night. They all have networks. A bunch of them have wireless operations. You need tech people and companies who are loyal to your cause and the United States and who provide you with top-tier services because they want your efforts to succeed in the public arena. I'm not sure that those I2 guys, the Awans, felt that way about Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Salt. And last but not least, in the conversation, we mentioned the Russia collusion investigation. Well, we're not going to talk about Russia collusion here. As of yet, there is no evidence to prove there was any between any member of the Trump campaign organization and Russian government officials or even anybody from Russia. But there's another Russian story out there, and this one definitely is deep in political corruption. As federal investigators still continue to look into that Russian interference, prosecutors are also looking at an Obama-era sale of that uranium mining company, Uranium One. Attorney General Jeff Sessions last year told federal prosecutors to look into the sale of that company to a Russian company, a transaction that President Trump has called the real Russian story over and over and over again. The Hill reported that Russian officials engaged in a racketeering scheme, those were their words at the Hill, to further its energy goals in the U.S. And an FBI informant recently told congressional committees, and you remember those committee hearings were classified, we didn't get to hear or see them. He told them that Russia paid millions of dollars to a U.S. lobbying firm trying to influence then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to make sure the deal was successful. Well, what was the deal? Let's talk about it. In 2013, Rosatom, backed by the Russian government, acquired a Canadian uranium mining company, now called Uranium One. It had a different name then, which has assets in the U.S. and a bunch of it. Uranium is a key material for making nuclear weapons, of course. Everybody knows that. Through the deal, Russia is able to own about 20% of all the U.S. uranium production capacity. But, according to Colin Chilcote, an energy affairs specialist who has written extensively about Russia's energy deals, said that the company only extracts about 11% of uranium in the U.S. Only 11%. I got to be honest with you. If it's 1%, it's too much in my mind. Why would we give up to anybody? Why would we sell? Why would we let any foreign country, especially Russia, have access to 1%, even 1% of our uranium? The deal also doesn't allow for that uranium to be exported at all. And that's according to Chilcote. He told Fox News, it's not like it's leaving the U.S. or somehow finding its way to more insidious players. Who are they? The Chinese? The Iranians? Who can be more insidious than the Russians? The agreement was approved by 9 government agencies with the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. And that's an interagency group that reviews how certain foreign investments can impact national security. The State Department under Clinton was one of those agencies, though Clinton has said time and time and time and time again that she was not personally involved in the agreement. I find it hard to believe that a sitting Secretary of State would not weigh in any way or let anybody in the State Department, who she managed all of, know her feelings about selling 20% of all uranium to the Russians. So why is it so controversial? Well, some investors reportedly donated millions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation. Some investors in what? Uranium One. Former President Bill Clinton, oh, by the way, received a $500,000 speaking fee in Russia and reportedly met with Vladimir Putin around the time of the deal. Republicans who were largely critical of the deal have reminded us of that over and over and over again. The FBI had looked into that agreement. They had uncovered that some Russian nuclear industry officials were engaged in some pretty shady dealings, which included extortion, bribery, and kickbacks. Evidence of wrongdoing by Vladimir Makarin, the Russian official overseeing Putin's nuclear expansion into the U.S., who was eventually sentenced to prison, was discovered by the FBI before the deal was approved. Now, the FBI was investigating. This is the Obama FBI was investigating. They found this guy who was running this wholesale transaction, Vadim Makarin, who oversees Putin's nuclear expansion in the U.S. He was discovered by the FBI and was eventually sentenced to prison, and they knew all of this before the deal was consummated. You've heard the name of this guy, author Peter Schweitzer. He wrote about that deal in his 2015 book, Clinton Cash, and if you haven't got it, it's worth buying. It's almost like a spy novel. He told Fox News there's no evidence that the people involved with approving the agreement knew that the FBI had an ongoing investigation into it. In other words, the FBI had been investigating it. They knew this guy was a bad guy. They knew he was Russian, and they didn't tell anybody. But White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said that if anyone colluded for a foreign government in the 2016 election, it was the Clinton campaign and the Democrats. Well, what about that informant? His name is Douglas Campbell. He is the FBI informant that came forward. He alleged that Moscow paid millions of dollars to a lobbying firm to help Bill Clinton's charities in order to influence Hillary, who was then former President Barack Obama's Secretary of State. Campbell made the claims in a 10-page statement given to the Senate Judiciary Committee, the House Intelligence Committee, and the House Oversight and Government Reforms Committee. Campbell said that Russian nuclear officials, and this is a quote from Campbell, told me at various times that they expected APCO to apply a portion of the $3 million annual lobbying fee it was receiving from the Russians to provide in-kind support for the Clintons' global initiative. I got to tell you this, folks. The real Russia story, I'm pretty sure it's uranium. The contract called for 4 payments of $750,000 over 12 months to be paid to Clinton's global initiative. APCO was expected to give assistance free of charge to the Clinton Global Initiative as part of their effort to create a favorable environment to ensure the Obama administration made affirmative decisions on everything from the Uranium One to the U.S.-Russia Civilian Nuclear Cooperation Agreement. APCO Worldwide, incidentally, is a global public affairs consulting agency. In a statement, APCO said Campbell's allegations are false and unfounded. That investigation is ongoing. We don't know exactly what state it's in or what information is out there. We assume that the Inspector General's report that is pending will include Uranium One information. The key issues at stake in the investigation are all about intent and knowledge. Was there an intent to influence official business? And if so, did the recipient take the money in exchange for taking official action? That's according to Jamil Jaffer, a former counsel in the Justice Department and the director of the National Security Law and Policy Program at George Mason's University. But Jaffer said the credibility of the so-called informant will also come into play. Quoting Jaffer here, was this a foreign agent or criminal who turned? Was this a private individual the FBI placed inside the deal? Was this a government employee? All these factors, plus the level of the informant's access to relevant information, will make a big difference here, Jaffer said. So folks, lots of corruption in Washington, D.C., and it's been proven again and again and again that political favor is for sale in Washington, D.C. And let me just point something out. It's not just Democrats. There are lots of Republican scandals, lots of Republican corruption stories out there, and I don't want anyone to think that's listening to this that I don't realize that and that I don't know about it. What I do know about is it is very obvious to Americans. Most Americans now understand and believe there are at least two sets of standards when it comes to political corruption and the investigation of it. One for Democrats and one for Republicans. Or let's just say one for everybody who's not Democrat. The left seems to be masterful at controlling the political narrative that the leftist media concentrate on. We talk about this all the time, case in point. Look at all the good that's been done. Look at the economic progress the United States has made. Tremendous progress under the Trump administration in just a little over a year, year and a half almost. Just think about the economic progress. It's unbelievable. The stock market has soared. Payroll is increasing. Unemployment at all-time lows. Black unemployment. Women unemployment. Lowest in history. And you hear very little about it. Nobody at MSNBC, CNN, NBC, ABC, CBS, none of them talk about the New York Times, the big periodicals in the East Coast and the West Coast. You'll read some good stuff in the Washington Post. You'll hear good stuff most of the time, because most of the stuff in the news is good stuff on Fox News. But those on the left refuse to give this president the credit for the positive changes that are impacting our lives since Donald Trump was elected president. It's sad. It's unfortunate. But you know what? You, Americans, are getting it. You're understanding the truth. You're looking and seeking and finding and ferreting out information to get the good and the bad. It's not just the left political narrative any longer. Kudos to you. That's going to do it for our political corruption chapter today. Thank you so much for joining us. We don't take you for granted. We appreciate it. Stay tuned and be back. So long, everybody.